Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John meets an archaeologist and steals gasoline. Meanwhile, I ponder Halloween candy bowl etiquette and give the telltale signs of a bad hotel room. Plus a conversation about creativity and how to know when it's time to stop editing your work. Today's episode is not sponsored by Blackout Drapes. Let the neighbors know you've updated your privacy policy. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Johnny is the Bantertown crew, and you can be too. Let's talk about that.
Yes. This is the first day of Christmas, right? Season. Because it's Halloween was yesterday.
Right.
So this is when the Christmas music, this is when the insufferable people in your life break out the Christmas music right now.
I thought that was the day after Thanksgiving.
No. Because there's no Thanksgiving music, so they just go ahead and kick in now. I'm talking about those people. I'm not talking about the normals.
You know we have a tree up.
No, you don't.
We do.
Already?
It's the fall tree. We do it. She does a, dude, it's amazing. She does a fall tree, and here's the good news for me. Now I've already wrestled that huge tree out of the attic, and it's already up. All I have to do is take the fall decorations back up in and bring the Christmas stuff down, but it's really nice. We have this spot in our living room that nothing else really fits but the tree. So fall tree, man.
No.
Shout out to my wife.
One day I'm going to get you to say something negative about Laura.
I can't wait.
It's going to happen.
Johnny, I have nothing.
Because I know you think negative things, and one day I'm going to get you to be like, God, she brings that tree out one more time. You're like, oh, we're rolling? And then it'll just be.
I love the tree.
I know you do, John.
The tree is.
It's fine.
I don't know why you're such a hater.
I'm not a hater at all. I'm just...
You know, she is better than you, so...
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not even talking about that. Okay, so Curry and I went out to dinner last night, as is our custom on Halloween, because we're the people who hide from the trick-or-treaters.
You turn all your lights off and just...
No, we... Here's what we did, though.
Ugh.
We left the bowl of candy.
Wow. They're not animals, Johnny.
On a table in the house so we could have it when we got back. No. We put it on the table and put that table on our little stoop.
And put that stoop on your...
And so... And we didn't even put a sign this year that said, take one, you know. We assume that there's an honor system implied.
Wow.
But my suspicion is, and I haven't looked at the Ring doorbell footage, but my suspicion is that the first kid came and went, yoink, and dumped the bowl into their bag.
Go on.
And you know what? I don't care. How do you feel about the honor system when it comes to candy? Like, do you have expectations that a kid should be? Is that a moment? Like, if Sadie was to do something like that, would you be like, Sadie? Sadie Driver. You took candy from other kids.
Yeah, I wouldn't let her take it all.
You wouldn't?
No.
But what if you found out she had? Would you give her a talking to?
Probably.
Do people still give talking tos?
Honey.
Or is
honey,
it talk,
I called you honey.
Is it talkings, well, talkings to?
You mentioned my daughter and honey. I called you honey.
Is it talkings to? Is it like, what is it, attorneys general? Is it like talkings to or is it talkings,
talkings to? I like talkings to.
Yeah.
I think that'd be correct. Yes, all I do is talkings
to. If you ever get a talkings to from attorneys general.
Oh, whew, my goodness.
You've done something wrong.
Attorneys general.
So you would tell her, though, you'd be like, that was, we're going back to that house somewhere.
Maybe. Can make
so,
a
Katie,
moment.
I went to dinner with our friend Katie. Who's the administrator of the church. And so she was telling a story about a video, and it's of this guy doing like a sociology experiment with a candy bowl. He puts the bowl of candy out, and the sign just says, just leave some Three Musketeers for my wife. They're her favorite.
Nice.
But there's no Three Musketeers in the bowl.
Oh.
And so, like, after a while, some people start rooting around. They're like, oh, cool. We can take anything but Three Musketeers. And then one kid goes, there's no Three Musketeers left for his wife. And they took Three Musketeers out of their bag.
Come
and
on.
Put it in the bowl. Isn't that amazing?
And you said America was going downhill, Johnny.
I've been saying it for years. Not anymore. That's candy right. will save us.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would
you
have
tell me this. Would you... Here, let me give you an example. Okay. Last night, we're eating. We're at a restaurant. And they had the whole Halloween
place.
Decor. And they had a bucket of candy. And it said, you know, spooky snacks or whatever.
Hey.
And it was like, for kids, I guess, that would come out with their parents take it. But it was way up on a high thing. But it's good stuff. There's like lint... like truffles and like a huge candy bar.
There's lint.
There's lint. I ate lint, John. I thought that was cotton candy. No. You know Lind, you know the L-I-N-D-T, Lint?
It's not
like
a really, sponsor.
It's a high-end chocolate bar.
Is it? I think the commercials act like it's high-end.
It's a full chocolate bar of this stuff. And it was in the bucket. A bag of Kit Kat individually wrapped. Like a bag unwrapped. And I was just like, and Curry goes, what are you doing? That's for kids. I go, I ate here.
Right.
And I took a couple things.
Well, of course.
But anyway, I just wonder, like, if you're out... What was your policy? Do you remember the bowl people? Was it when you trick-or-treated, was there a bowl person or was that not a thing?
Most of the time they would come to the door.
Yeah. They'd say, what are you supposed to be?
Right. By the way, my wife sent me something that said overachieving children are dressing up this year. And so when someone asks, like, what are you supposed to be?
Like,
I was supposed to be a lot of things.
Yeah.
No, I would be like, hey, take what you're supposed to take and share and all the stuff.
That's nice.
Yeah, I mean, although we could get pretty savage on stuff. I mean, if there's an opportunity, Johnny, I'm a rule bender. You know, it's just...
I remember a moment. Well, let me give you an example of one that I've done. I'm not proud of it. I don't think it's wrong, but it's not right. Some things are not wrong. But they're not right.
Right. This is you confessing for the things.
Okay. Here's what happened.
That you have done and you've left undone.
Yes.
Right.
A sin of omission and commission.
Mm.
I'm at a hotel and I get in and I'm exhausted because I've been traveling all day and I just want to like draw the blackout curtains and go to sleep. And I realize that there's cleaning crews going up and down the hallway, and I notice that there's no do not disturb sign in my room to put on the door. And I'm like,
you should start carrying one of those in your bag.
Well, here's what happened. I look across the hall. There's one on the door.
No, you did not.
Right across from me. And I thought, so I grabbed it and I put it on my door. And so I don't know if it's, here's what it is. That guy may have gotten like a knock, but it's not like I cost him money or I just...
Wow, you cost him sleep.
I caused him to be harassed.
What if he has like a medical condition and needed...
Like if he wakes up, he's out of hibernation and he can't get back.
Desperate rest.
He can't get back.
Oh my gosh, Johnny.
You're
a monster.
I am.
Yeah.
Right. But I remember you telling me a story. I don't want to expose you because
after you've
come down on me, but I remember you telling me a story one time about how you rented a car... on a trip with Laura, and you're like, and the gas needle never moved, even though we'd driven it, you know, up and down wherever. And so we just returned it, and I was like, John, what are you doing?
It was full.
It wasn't full.
Johnny, it was full.
It's not full. You used gas. And I said, John, you didn't screw over the car company. You screwed over the next person to rent. And you go, yeah, you're right. Because the needle's going to move. Like, when they're pulling out, then it's going to go to... Yeah.
Johnny, I was a different guy back then.
Were you? John, this was last week. No, it wasn't. It was a while, but...
I do recall that, Senator.
I think you've done it more than once, and you're like, which time was it?
I usually drive far enough that it moves. That just means I drove.
Sometimes these companies require a receipt because of people like you. Because if you drive less than 75 miles, they go, we need a gas receipt, because they want to know that you're not one of those not fill it up people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you always fill up on your own?
Yeah.
Because otherwise they'll charge you for a full tank.
Like $10 a gallon or whatever.
For a full tank.
No. They just charge you for whatever they had to put in. Charge it. Yeah.
Because I was told.
I've had it done before.
I was running late one time. Because prices are as good there.
Yeah, but you have to pre-buy to do that. You have to tell them, I want to buy a half tank of gas.
Well, how do you know what you're going to use?
Exactly. They're hoping you overestimate. We're getting into the weeds now of like rental car stuff. What I'm saying is you're a sinner and it's time to own it.
Look, Johnny, I'm a sinner, but that's not even the top 10 things.
Do you think it's not. It's not even close. Which do you think is worse, listener, rental car fuel or stealing the do not disturb sign and appropriating it for your own room?
I'm going to tell you, you robbed someone of sleep.
But it's because I didn't have, so it's like, okay, if I was, I'm Jean Valjean of sleep. I needed bread.
Yeah.
You have bread.
Yeah.
I stole your bread.
Or you could have just asked the people who had the cart, hey, can I have another sign? Were you too good to, like, talk to someone who was doing what you consider to be a menial task? Is it?
Oh, you think they have signs on the carts? Well, I wouldn't have known to ask. Wow. I would not have known to ask a cart.
Isn't that convenient?
Now, I steal the soaps, but I'm just kidding. I don't steal soaps. I don't like the hotel stuff is awful.
It's not great. Unless they have the pumps on the wall.
Here's how you know you're staying in a dump hotel. By the way, when I started out my comedy career, I stayed in some bed bug ridden places because you just stay cheap places. Days Inn and the like. Not a sponsor. And I realize there's a formulation that you can tell if you're in a dump, in case you're ever wondering. If you are in a hotel and the shampoo is in a sauce packet, like the tear off the corner, it's a packet of ketchup, but it's shampoo, you are in a dump.
This feels like...
Get out of there.
This feels like you might be a redneck. Like, you could take a hole. You're in a dump if, and you just, bro.
If you...
Just write, like, 70 of these.
Yeah. But that's one of the main ones, is you didn't even put a bottle. You just... You put this in a mayonnaise packet.
You know how I can tell? If I walk in and the toilet paper roll is half gone.
Oh, and they didn't refresh.
They didn't refresh it. Oh, you're like, man.
Yeah. They're trying to
Even though I go to public restrooms, and that's fine. But here.
Yeah.
When I'm paying for this, could you spring for a full toilet paper roll?
If there's half a roll and there's a guy still in there.
Well, that's when you know.
That's.
Yeah.
You're in prison.
You have checked into prison. Wait a second.
Hold on.
Some extra security at the gate.
Knew I shouldn't have taken that do not disturb sign.
Oh, that's great.
They'll prosecute you.
They will. Hey, you know what, though? You know what's not disturbing, Johnny?
What's that?
When we hear a couple words from a few of our sponsors.
Okay.
Let's do that. I listened to our ads last week.
And
they were great.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I was listening to a video from John Acuff, who's a great, I think you would call him a thought leader, John Acuff at this point.
Yeah.
He's I don't like when people call themselves thought leaders, but I would call John a thought leader. He's a good speaker, and I like his content. But he was talking about this generation and my generation being in debt, like we have the biggest debt or whatever. And he was like, well, the economy is not great. And he said, we have these phones in our pockets, and every app except for a calculator is trying to sell you something. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's right.
Yeah.
Like, even the apps that seem like, oh, it's just Facebook, they're trying to sell you something. There's ads, there's promoted ads. Any app is just trying to get you to stay on the app longer. That's why the news apps are so outrage inducing. They want you to, they're promoting the app itself. And the longer you stay on that app, an ad might come up.
Which is how they sell to the ad.
Yeah.
To whoever's buying the ad.
Right. They're like, oh, this is our retention. Yeah. And so, but it is interesting. And I will say this. My calculator tried to sell me. No. And I'm upset about it. But I found out something. I've heard about this before, but I did it the other day in the airport. Is a reverse Google search. You ever done a reverse Google search?
I've not.
Okay. So.
Is that like a reverse mortgage?
Yes.
Okay.
Your Google pays you money.
That'd be great.
In Mother Russia, Google searches for you. No. Okay. So I was waiting for my plane to go take off with Curry. And this guy had these Nike tennis shoes on. And I was like, sneakers. I say tennis shoes still.
That's okay.
I was like, I like those. Those are cool. And I was like, I don't even know what they are though. Like, how do I find out? And Curry goes, I think you can just like take a photo of it. And I go, I've heard people do this. It's like, maybe it's easy. So I snap a photo. You can tap on the photo. And one of the options is search image.
Yeah.
So when you search the image, it pops up a bunch of places where you can buy that shoe.
Yeah.
And I bought the shoes and I'm wearing them today. Look at this. These are my new Nikes. How do you like that?
That had to be an AI thing, surely. Like, it's,
I don't know. But the reason I used to hear about it is reverse image searches were for people who were being like, I've heard about it for years about catfishing. Like, okay, somebody's... A woman's in love with me, and this is her photo, and I've never seen her in person, but she's a hottie, and look how nice she is. I've talked to her on the phone, but that's it. Well, you can click on that image that's her Facebook photo and find out she's a realtor in San Jose, and it's that's not the person. That's not Genevieve. from Irving.
She has not invited you to England to preach at her church.
She has not.
Right.
And so that's what I've heard about is like doing like some detective work with Google reverse image search. But this was just like, I wanted these shoes. And Google's like, we're happy to sell you these shoes.
It's ingenious because, and by the way, ingenious is the correct adjective.
Because it sounds like
genius,
the opposite.
Genius is a noun. So every time you say something, to say something's genius is...
A person can be a genius, but they do things that are ingenious.
That's correct.
A genius is when you're the opposite of genius.
Right. You lack genius altogether.
Yeah. It's like amoral.
Yeah. Anyway, it's an ingenious idea because think about it. Johnny, it's sad.
But you're saying that because we're in the throes of capitalism. You're like, oh, it's great that we just sell things and buy things to feel better about ourselves.
Well, I didn't say that. I mean, if I had to pick.
And I know this, we're saying this coming off of an ad, and I apologize.
Yeah, yeah. If I had to pick between capitalism and, say, socialism or communism.
Yes, sure.
I would pick capitalism.
Well, we have. So I'm glad you feel that way.
In terms of, like, in its purest form, most governments. Okay, I always say this about it. I think I wrote about this in Not So Black and White, Johnny.
Oh, man. Are you going to quote yourself right now?
Hello.
I think I remember John Driver saying, only a fool quotes himself.
If you reverse Google this, you will. No, it's like we take the words and make them so scary. And yes, guys, I mean, communist China, communist Russia, certainly North Korea. I mean, these are extremes that I... You know, especially man, North Korea. I mean, what a just a desperate, despairing place for the people there. But you know, like we do have things within a capitalistic society that are socialistic in nature because any sort of something that's provided by the government that you raise taxes for. This is the wrestling since the beginning of our nation. How much power will the government have?
And right.
Either, is it going to be, you know, of the people, for the people, by the people, to help the people? Or is it, well, I think I just created my slogan for running in 2024.
County commissioner.
That's right. Or is it going to develop its own sort of sense of power and its own structure and its own needs that now the people are trying to provide for it. So like that's the wrestling between between the left and the right, between, you know,
like a nanny state versus just nobody has any safety nets.
Yeah.
And people just fall through the cracks because it's like, look, fend for yourself, bootstraps, whatever.
And you can find
those are the two extremes.
Yeah, you can find so much data right now to verify whatever opinion you want to already have. But the truth is if you drive on a road, that is a state or federal or local highway, it's socialism. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're providing something that everyone's using.
Yeah.
And they're pooling everyone's resources to do it.
I don't like it one bit.
That's why I don't drive
on
roads.
What's wrong with dirt?
Yeah. I don't drive. I drive in the ditch right beside them.
What's Wrong with Dirt is my new country album that's coming out.
What's wrong with dirt? Yeah. What rhymes with dirt?
What rhymes
with... A lot of things, dude.
There's tons of stuff. You traveled, speaking of roads and public travel.
I did.
Weren't you in a city?
I was in a city.
Okay. Then you got a
next question.
Colonial Williamsburg?
Yeah, so I got to go do an event we did last year with my friend Reggie Dabbs.
You went into the past?
I went.
You got to go do an event you did last year?
I got to redo.
This is going
to
be a crazy story. There I was.
Speaking of, by the way, someone found, I read an article, someone found a DeLorean with like 50 miles on it in someone's barn.
Wow.
That had been bought and just parked since the 80s.
That's where he ditched the DeLorean, was in a barn after
my
he,
gosh.
Remember, he pushes it into a barn.
Yeah. But and that the it was mint condition except like rat infested and stuff. They're going to redo a lot of it, but it's the original. Anyway.
What's interesting about DeLoreans though is they're really bad cars,
right?
Like they're really unreliable cars,
well, sure,
and have no horsepower, and they were they're just funky looking.
They wouldn't get to 88 if you needed them to.
No,
but at any rate, I did not take a DeLorean. I took an airplane with my wife, and so we went and met Reggie for the second year of an event called Let Freedom Ring. Well, it's an organization called Let Freedom Ring.
Yeah.
And they call it that, Johnny. It's the First Baptist Church, Colonial Williamsburg in Virginia, and the oldest black church in America.
Yeah.
At least one of the. And they're excavating the original site there from the late 18th century. And, man, it's unbelievable because it became a parking lot.
Yeah.
So they sold it in like the mid-1900s. And then Colonial Williamsburg, like, paved over it.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the late 1700s, 60% of the population of Colonial Williamsburg were black. either slaves or black free people. And so there's, I mean, a community there, and they're having church, and they're, you know, living lives and having children. And when you think about Colonial Williamsburg over the years,
right,
it's like you're learning all this history, but it's basically the history of 40% of the people up until like the early 2000s. And so the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation, the College of William & Mary, which is right there, basically they share a campus almost, you know, on different ends. A lot of different churches in the area and different organizations. The Virginia Institute for Racial Healing is one of the sponsors of this. Like, they've been trying to basically unearth and right that wrong to balance the history of the people who founded this town, and it's so important. So they went back and they've begun excavating over the last 2 years the original site of their church.
Yeah.
And they have so far uncovered, or they've found like 50 graves where, because it was a church, they're, you know, burying parishioners on their site, and they're going to rebuild that church to its original spec back on the original property. But it was amazing. We did a forum talking about Not So Black and White, and
which you can get on Amazon.
Yeah.
.com.
I mean, it was great. And of course, Reggie's always the best. It's a, me and him sit at a table, and we had like 25 minute opening sort of comments, and then they had like curated questions for us, and then we took questions from the crowd. It was great. I mean,
that's cool.
We really, really enjoyed it. We had a great time. Ate a lot of seafood, you know, enjoyed that time. Took a walking tour of Colonial Williamsburg with like the app. You
did
know?
You get a tricorn hat?
I did not.
Why not?
Do you know the history, by the way, of how
of the tricorn?
No, of Colonial Williamsburg. Do you know how it came to be?
No.
This is really interesting.
Okay.
So like it was just, you know, I mean, I saw the original governor's mansion where Lord Dunmore, the British governor, lived. I mean, it's huge. This is a huge.
Lord Dunmore. Yeah.
Yeah. That's he should have done more. He might have stayed
saying.
In power. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man.
More like more Lord Dunless. I wonder if they told that joke back then.
Probably.
Anyway, yeah. At any rate, then after him, Patrick Henry was the first governor of Virginia, and he lived there. And then Thomas Jefferson lived there. I mean, it's a pretty big deal.
Well, Monticello.
And it's all been.
Right? And that.
That's correct.
Monticello? Okay.
Yeah. And so they like have restored all these buildings. Uh-huh. Some of them are original. They're all on original site, and some of them are the original actual buildings. Some they had to rebuild, but it was all just dilapidated in like the early 19th century. And so it was actually a local pastor who had went to restore one building. And I believe the original church there, the Episcopal church on site where all these like graves from the 1600s are and stuff.
Right.
And he basically had this vision to restore the whole town. And so, you know who he got on board? One of the Rockefellers.
Oh,
at the time.
That'll do it. Yeah.
So literally the richest people, you know, in the world at the time came on board, and they restored this. It's been about 100 years now. They restored this entire community. So Colonial Williamsburg is its own thing, and it is, and they worked with historians and, you know, they're still excavating artifacts and all kinds of things, but like they have literally made it to basically what it was like, except the buildings have electricity and things like that inside. But otherwise, they're exactly built as they were. And so it's really cool. But
yeah,
all about
and
the
Rockefellers. And you met an archaeologist.
So at the site, there was a lot of tours going on. So they had like a little table, and they had some of the artifacts they found. They found like 130,000 artifacts on this site.
Okay.
And so my wife and I are just kind of walking around and kind of waiting our turn and walk up. And so it's one of the archaeologists from, I believe from William & Mary, but at least the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation. I don't know if they're working together or not, I'm assuming. But yeah, she was great. She was telling us all kinds of stuff and showing us what they found. And we're just kind of looking, you know, and it's so funny. She goes, well, I'm probably boring you guys, you know. And I was like, no, like, actually, I'm super interested in this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And she was kind of like, oh, why? I was like, well, you know, I've done some work with the, you know, Let Freedom Ring Foundation, you know. She was like, oh, what? She just kept kind of asking, because I don't want to be.
Right.
Be like you walking up and going, I'm a comedian, you know, like you just don't. I was like, well, I wrote a book. And, you know, she's like, what book? And I was like, I told her. She's like, no way, you wrote Not So Black and White.
She knew the book. Bro.
She hadn't read it yet.
You found the fan.
But she goes, so I spoke at an Episcopal church the next day, and she goes to that church.
Yeah.
And so she knew all about, because they're one of the sponsors of all the events and stuff. And so, yeah, we connected and saw our church the next day. We did a forum at the church as well between services.
And you preached at the Episcopal church.
I did.
You did your 12-minute sermon.
I did, yeah. So I had between 12 and 15 for two services.
They gave you a window.
I did 13 and 14 minutes, respectively.
Did you see a countdown clock, or were you just
I took my phone.
Okay.
Yeah, no. I time my sermons every week to make sure I don't go over, so.
Did you wear a robe?
I did not. Okay. Did not. We really enjoyed it. Yeah, I sat out in the crowd, and they were very, very nice, and we had a great time. I mean, super hospitable and just very encouraging. It was awesome. So, yeah.
So how did you feel like a lot was left unsaid, or do you go like, you know what, 14 is my new wheelhouse?
Well, I've already come down in the last year now. I'm a 30-minute preacher. I used to be
but
at 45.
That's half of, like, 14 is
going
big...
from 45, sometimes even 50 down to 30 has been a big change.
Yeah.
But I feel better about it.
I think we're going to get to the point where you just say amen and we're out. Like, it's just like, thanks so much for coming to church.
Hey, guys.
Let's get to Cracker Barrel.
Hope you had a good time today. You know, they read so much scripture as a part of their liturgy and the lectionary for, you know. So there's so much that's been read by the time you get up. And I'm reflecting on the main gospel passage of the day. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, it was so fun because I told them at the in-between discussion, people came, they kind of want to know about our church, you know, what it's like and what's different. And they were talking a lot about the differences in our area in terms of, like, almost everyone we met there was kind of a political moderate.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're.
You're like, what's that?
Yeah. They were like,
how's that work?
And they knew, they were like, kind of, you know,
right.
and even some who had like moved here and so I'm not getting political. I'm just saying it was just interesting to find people in another region who were seeing things, you know, differently than sort of it gets very extremist very quickly one way or another in a lot of places in America. And I think we're living near some of that, but they would ask, and I was like, well, here's what's funny, guys. I mean, we preach in our churches. My grandfather, Pentecostal preacher, he might preach an hour and 15.
Uh-huh.
Totally normal.
Yeah. They're like, that's a week of sermons for us.
Yeah. And I was like, and it's not, for most of my ministry, uncommon for me to go 45.
And they were like, how much do you think people absorb to that? You go, about 14 minutes.
Yeah.
That's what's true. It's really true.
Yeah.
Like, haven't you said that before, that like all the sermons you've preached, and back in the youth pastor days, you'd say like, you'd ask the kids that grew up in your youth ministry, be like, how many sermons do you remember?
Yeah.
And like, they could remember like one or two like object lesson things you did.
Oh, yeah.
Like gimmicky. I remember when you broke the light.
I broke the green light thing inside of the bubble wrap.
The survival light.
But they didn't know the light was in the bubble wrap. They just thought I was breaking bubble wrap and it lit up in my hand.
And the whole thing about like God has to break you sometimes to whatever. Or life breaks you, but it's how your light, I don't know, the light gets out. I can't remember the
thing. Something.
God plays with bubble wrap. He likes the noise. I don't know what the...
We just skip all the analogies. Yeah, I mean, it's humbling in that respect. That's one of the reasons I try things differently now.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, but because, you know what they say, Johnny, people don't remember everything you said, but they remember the way you made them feel.
You know who said that? Well, it's been attributed to more than one person, but...
Eleanor Roosevelt.
Maya Angelou.
Okay.
That's what I think. That's who I think said it.
Yeah.
I'm a poet laureate. We do have a poet laureate because she spoke at the, isn't she the poet laureate now?
Yeah.
She spoke at the inauguration for Biden. So she's young.
Yeah.
Very young.
Yeah.
But for years it was Maya Angelou, right? For like a couple of decades.
I'm not up on my poet laureate history.
Is that something you never aspired to?
I applied.
Did you ever write poetry when you were?
Oh, yeah. I wrote poetry before I wrote songs.
Okay, I didn't know this. I don't remember this side of John Dreyer. This was all to girls, right?
No. It was just, mainly as a kid, I'd write stuff, but was awful. But
oh, come on.
Yeah.
No limericks?
No.
All right, fine.
My one children's book I wrote is...
Oh, that's true.
And I'm still excited about that book. So
I think you should be. When is it...
Well, we pitched it to a publisher, and they were like, if I told
you
this...
They said, let me pitch it right back.
They said, oh, here, catch. and they were like, well, one publisher really liked it, and then just kind of, then one day decided not to.
Yeah.
Not the content, they just kind of faded. And then another one, they were like, we felt that this was too didactic.
Oh, no.
Do you know what didactic means?
I don't think I do.
Because I had to go... I knew it from my education days, but I was like, I need
a children's book being didactic.
Right. I had to go... Which I didn't use the word didactic in the children's book.
No.
I didn't do that.
Because nothing rhymes with it.
And so I went... Right. And so I went and looked it up, and it means like to teach a lesson, basically, to inform.
Right.
So my agent was like...
Like the lessons were too obvious?
I don't know.
You don't want to tip your hand that you're teaching a lesson?
Well, it had a real, like, so that's the true story of a blah, 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 blah. So it has like that that feel, you know, at the very
end.
And
the moral is.
Yeah. And it's like, well, that's what, and my agent was like, isn't that
They want
what,
you to kind of be more, a little bit more.
I don't know.
Hide your hand a little
bit
with
isn't
it.
Isn't that what children's books kind of do? Like, don't they teach, I mean, Which made me feel good that someone else felt that that was. And that might have been a nice way of saying, we don't think this book would sell because no one knows who you are. I mean, that's the general feedback. But and that's fair.
You think kids are that savvy, though, that they're like, this better not be teaching me a lesson.
Right. This is a bit didactic. Yeah.
If a kid ever said didactic.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a huge red flag for your child.
Oh, yeah.
It's like if a kid wants to take a nap. Mm-mm. Something's going on.
You think they want to, like, get into mischief?
I don't know.
Tomfoolery?
I'm going to head off to bed. You're like, you're six.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Right.
You're starting fires.
Right.
Something. Yeah.
Right. You're in there.
That's crazy. But, yeah.
You take a Sharpie to the sheets right now.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a red flag. A kid saying didactic. But I don't. To me, I mean, I guess there were always lessons. Like, even Dr. Seuss, you know, the Grinch who stole Christmas, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the whole lesson. But... enjoy it along the way, but then it wraps it up with a whole thing of like, this is the moral.
And that was my comp. Like, it was like, oh, I'm paralleling my comp, Johnny.
You almost said mein Kampf.
Mein Kampf sounds totally different. No, Mike. So we say in the industry,
not a children's book.
COMP. Which
not,
is
not a sponsor.
My comparison.
Yes.
Sorry, but that came out. Very quickly. Your face, because you wanted to say it, because you heard it. That's so funny. Yes, not a children's book at all. And we do not recommend the reading of Mein Kampf.
We don't. Not.
We're against it.
Never will be a sponsor.
Yeah, but no, it was, you know.
I think Little Fish Named Nelly needs to happen, and you self-published it.
Well, right? I didn't put it out, per se.
You put it out here.
We did it here
in our church community.
Our graduating seniors.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I've rewritten.
And they've read it to their children, probably.
I don't know.
Oh.
I've rewritten it, like, to shorten a few things and make some things, like, because it's a...
Oh, you're going to have a look at it again?
I had a look. I think I've improved it.
Mm.
But not much. It didn't change much, but just shortened it a little bit.
I think about that sometimes, about re-looking at things that I've written. Now that I feel like I'm a better comedian, like, oh, I bet I could write that to be funnier now. It didn't work as well then. I bet I can fix it.
Yeah.
And I was reading an article today about the guy from, is it Verve Pipe? They had their one-hit wonders. They had The Freshman. Remember the song The Freshman in the 90s? And he was talking about having to make peace with the fact that he's a one-hit wonder. And he was talking about where his mind was when he wrote that song. He was just like, he literally said he was living in a storage unit. Because he'd been kicked out of his apartment.
Wow.
And so he had all of his amps and equipment around him. But he got this record deal because he had some underground, like, following in that area. And so this label, like, liked what he was writing. And they're like, keep it coming. And so he was writing these songs in a storage unit.
Wow.
Freezing. Trying to, like... And then that record went on to do really well. And then you have to top it.
Yeah.
And then you have to... And he wasn't able to do it. And he was like, if I... He goes... Sometimes I listen to songs on that record and I cringe. Even the writing structure of the... I'm a way better songwriter now, but something about the way I wrote that struck a chord with people. And so he's like, I'm glad that I'm not able to go back and tamper with it, even though I would really like to. Like, even now, he's like, I'm tempted to go tamper with it and apologize for certain lines in it.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Yeah,
like the rawness of it is what connected, maybe? I don't know.
It's interesting because my daughter, you know, they just released 1989 Taylor Swift, Taylor's version.
Yeah.
And she even said, you know, she's listened to stuff enough. She was like, you know, I forget her words, but it's almost like she missed some of the rawness.
Of course. Well, and you know.
Because the vocal's so much better now.
Well, and we know why she's doing it. It's because she doesn't own her masters.
Right.
So it's a money thing, and it's a I'm taking back my property kind of a thing. And the fans are all on board with it.
New fans who only like the new stuff now get something from the past.
But the way you heard something the first time sticks in your mind, and it's hard to unlearn that stuff.
Right. It's interesting. It was interesting to hear a 15-year-old say that.
Yeah.
I mean, she likes it, but, you know.
Like, there's a group that took off during the pandemic, and I literally started following them on TikTok. And they're a brother-sister duo. They're called Dury. They're out of Minnesota. And he just had this cool, and he had been in a band for like 10 years that was kind of going nowhere. And he started this little project out of desperation, living in the basement of his parents' house with his sister. I think he's in his early 30s, maybe late 20s, early 30s. They had a song go viral on TikTok. Then they blah, blah, blah. And then that song, they put a few songs from that project out on Apple Music, and I got it. So I have it on my phone. And then they got some interest in like an indie label, I think, and they got a little bit of money together to do like a sweetened version of those songs.
Yeah.
And now that record is out. It's been released. And I do not like the new versions.
Interesting.
And they're better. But I remember the choices he made in instrumentation, and even the vocal cadences can't change a little bit. And I'm like, it's not like these, they're not good. It's just, and I wonder if people are hearing them the first time, it locks, that locks in their brain as that's the right way to hear. It happens with jokes. You hear, you know, like if I do a joke that I've, that's been on a record, and I'm doing it in front of a crowd that maybe doesn't know that joke, but like 20 people in the crowd may have heard it before. They'll be like, oh, you said it different. It's like, it's wrong. Like, it's wrong to them because I took a breath here or I said a different word there. But it's like, I'm just vamping a little bit.
That's interesting. Yeah, because there have been times I've been at shows with you and you've cut a tag.
Yeah.
You know, or something, and I miss it. Because I know the joke is this.
Right.
But you're streamlining.
Yeah, or I'm like, well, you don't understand that 50% of the time that tag doesn't land like you think. So it may be your favorite part of the joke, but I cut it because you have to cut it. You have to be willing to do it because that makes room for one more joke that lands 100% of the time.
Yeah.
If you cut that 50-50 joke, now you have room. Whereas before, you would save every joke that got any laugh.
See, the loyalist in me.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It hurts me, too.
It's like, oh. Yeah. It's such a...
Sometimes you got to push, you know, got to push your jokes out of the plane. You just have to be like, look, you've been good to me, but, and they don't have a parachute, John.
I was going to say that.
This is a, I'm
they're murdering. Not going to fly. They're,
I'm, mm-mm.
You're dropping bombs.
These
on people.
Jokes are, it's not going to be back. My jokes are like, I can't feel my legs. I'm like, you don't have legs. Anyway. It got dark. But no, yeah, you have to be a little bit ruthless. If you want the show to be like wall to wall good, and what I guess I'm saying is, John, you got to keep working on Nelly until it's there. I've sent mixed messages because I said basically if you went back and messed with it, you might be ruining it, like the freshman.
And now you're telling me,
and now I'm saying maybe it's just not good enough. That's the hard part in art too. Is like
sure.
We all know that there are a lot of people who are super talented that haven't quote unquote made it. And then we know there are a lot of people who are just like skating by on like favors from their father, and they just they've been lucky.
Yeah.
But when we see someone succeed or not succeed, it's hard not to think, well, look, cream rises to the top. It is what it is. Or like, it's a weird strength. We know it's not always true, but it's hard not to hold yourself to that standard.
No, I completely, that's the thing. There are some things that I don't push anymore.
Yeah.
Because I'm going, okay, that doesn't, I would write that differently. Mm-hmm. My message would be different.
Right.
Like I have, believe it or not, I have like still,
it's almost why I didn't do the podcast, honestly.
Yeah.
Because of stuff like that, being afraid of coming out with a take and then 5 years later, not even feeling that way anymore. And now there's a record of that take.
Yeah. No, I agree.
But what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
Art quality. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm connected to my daughter and to my kids.
Yeah.
You know, my old youth group kids on that one. But
yeah.
For some reason, you know what I ought to do? Right. You're going to love this.
Oh, boy.
I should take 7 minutes and read it on the podcast. Not today. Some other time.
Yeah.
And let listeners tell me.
Nelly.
Like, yeah. Because like,
I think it's good. It's a good.
It's an easy story.
And we could put a little website down at the bottom. They could buy the book if they want.
Well, I don't have any way to even get that book anymore.
Guerrilla marketing with this thing.
Maybe they decide they want this to go viral. You know what I'm saying? And they start, there's a clamoring, a grassroots clamoring for a little fish named Nelly. But I, that's the thing about it. And this is what gets me because this is not my way. I'm a pretty emotional guy, but like I cry almost every time I read it out loud to somebody. Like I'll get on the phone with the publisher and I always ask him, can I read it to you?
Uh-huh.
Instead of you just getting it, like, you know, because it's got a cadence like Dr. Seuss's. I mean, it's not anywhere on Dr. Seuss level. I'm saying it has a cadence, and so I want to make sure I'm telling it gets across as I want it to. And there's a couple places I get, and I think again I feel because it's a you know,
well, it's linked to your real emotion, so you're remembering that emotion that's linked to when you wrote it,
or I'm seeing my daughter, or I'm seeing because there's especially a moment when the main character is on their sojourn.
So it's not about a real fish, is what you're saying.
Well, actually, it is about a real fish. That's the twist. People don't. You can't say it.
But no, there is a twist. Don't give it away.
There's a twist.
Oh, there's a twist.
Because, and that's why I did some rewriting to make sure that the twist at the end, makes sense all the way throughout. So, yeah, now they're maybe intrigued. It'd be a quick, maybe
come,
next week, Jimmy.
Come back next week for a random reading from John's children's book.
I love it.
In the meantime, John, we're going to go back into the past.
Oh.
All the way back. This Week in History, it's a segment we call Talk About Then. John, the first U.S. Christmas stamps go on sale this week, 1962. They depicted a wreath, two candles, and the words, Christmas 1962. Here's the part that you'll find interesting. Legal actions by groups citing separation of church and state were unsuccessful, and over 1 billion stamps were sold. So people came out saying this was separation, like just for having a wreath and candles.
That said, Christmas 1962.
People freaked out.
That's interesting.
And they were overridden and whatever. So,
I guess because the word Christ is in Christmas.
I guess.
I suppose.
It's interesting.
62. That's interesting.
The first hydrogen bomb explosion, John. Mm. November of 1952, the U.S. explodes the first hydrogen bomb at, I'm going to get this wrong, Aniwetok Atoll in the South Pacific. The force was that was 10 times that of an atomic bomb. I didn't know that. Hydrogen bomb. 10 times the force. So I don't know what to derive from that. I don't remember that. Obviously, it was 1952, but I don't know.
Wow.
Have we used hydrogen bombs in war? Do you know this? Okay. John, the first president moved into the White House this week. Do you want to guess which president it was?
What year?
I'm not going to say, because you're going to know it right away.
No, hold on.
Do you know the first president to move into the White House?
The first president to move in the White House, I'm going to guess, was Jefferson.
John Adams.
Oh, I was one
of them. So Washington's the only U.S. president who did not live there.
I just thought, because again, they were, that makes sense. There's 10 years between
November
the
1st,
war
1800. He moved into at the time it was known as the president's house. It wasn't known as the White House. But yeah. Washington was the only.
Yeah.
Where did he just lived on his farm? I guess he was like, I got it.
No,
he was remote.
But the capital was in New York. So
okay.
So then you've seen Hamilton.
I have.
But you know the great compromise of the.
But if it's not wrapped to me, I don't understand history anymore.
You know, actually, hold on, because we didn't have a president before the ratification of the Constitution with the Articles of Confederation. So I'm trying to think. Since we didn't have a president, when he became president, my guess is he was temporarily, because they moved it. That was the whole, he threw New York under the bus and moved the capital to the South to appease the Southerners because there was already.
Oh, really? I didn't. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. That's the tension. That's why Jefferson, slave owners, they wanted the capital in the South and not in the North to switch their power, which we don't consider D.C. to be a Southern city to us today, but it would have been considered that then.
John, this week, 1512, Michelangelo unveiled his masterpiece on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel in the Vatican. He had begun working on it in 1508.
Wow.
Yeah.
Talk about getting it right, this guy.
Sistine Chapel.
He's been some
time. Sistine Chapel. Why is that not a... Anyway, Michelangelo. That's, it's the... Is that the one with the... The fingers and the touching?
Yeah.
God and the creation of...
Yeah.
Is that what's happening?
Yeah, and you know, and I've seen some of the stuff on it where he literally laid on these scaffolding.
Yeah.
Like, what?
On his back.
You know, 60 feet in the air or whatever. I mean, it's just crazy. So meticulous.
Have you ever painted? Did you ever get into the arts?
Art in high school, but...
Where you didn't have...
No, not a great...
You were not an aptitude for it?
No, I mean, if you got into like some of the... I'm not saying paint by numbers, but like if you gave me a technique for like a landscape or for a building or whatever, I can probably reproduce it. But that's more like...
That's a tracing, John. What you've described.
No, I could make it, but I can't, you know, I don't have that artistic eye to go do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not very artsy, Johnny.
The Vatican reminds me of this. When you said the Vatican and then art, there was a video about... This was a documentary years ago, and it's on YouTube still, if you ever go look it up. It's about somebody who had, he was what's called an autistic savant, kind of like what Rain Man was, where they have like diminished mental capacities in one area of their life, but then they have like this one thing they're a savant at, like math or
right.
this guy was like had a photographic memory and a talent for art. And he was nonverbal. I remember it. I think he was nonverbal. And they took him out in Rome and flew him around in a helicopter for an hour. And then they came back and he drew the Roman landscape.
Wow.
And they said he even knew, like, he knew so many. It was a huge, like, piece of butcher paper that went, like, wall to wall. And he drew the city. And he was getting, like, the number of windows correct on these big buildings. It was insane to watch. It's a really an interesting video worth watching if you look it up. It's a autistic, I don't know, draws
I've seen
Italy.
It.
Or, it's
yeah,
really
I've
interesting.
Seen it. Yeah, truly.
Okay, John, finally, Dr. Crawford Long, born this week, 1815, died 1878. People didn't live as long back then. American physician, he performed the first operation using ether for anesthesia.
Wow.
So he kind of... This was big because I guess back then you just were like, bite down on this piece of wood.
Take this bottle of whiskey and...
Yeah. He used ether during the removal of a neck tumor. It was his own. No, he didn't. That's a weird... Hold on! He passed out. No, he administered sulfuric ether on a towel and simply had the patient inhale. So it wasn't like a... He just was like, breathe into this and then we're going to hope for the best. And I don't know how... Hopefully... There wasn't a lot of patients where he's like, that was too much.
Right. The experimentation, that's not a...
You don't want to be... Yeah.
Exact titration of meds. So.
Long had observed that some who participated in the ether frolics, that's what it's in quotes, ether frolics, were popular at the time, experienced bumps and bruises, but afterward had no recall. Maybe that's those people who are abusing it, maybe, because they're calling it ether frolics. So... I need to look that part up and see like what that meant. That's probably like these guys are huddled together taking drugs. So they were getting high on it, but he noticed that they had bumps and bruises when they were high, but afterward they had no recall of what had happened. So he postulated that diethyl ether, produced effects similar to the anesthetic effects of nitrous oxide described, in 1800. The word anesthesia is from the Greek for without sensation.
Huh.
So that's what anesthesia.
Wow.
There's your Greek history. You pastors love that stuff.
Oh, we love it.
You know?
Did I tell you that we have a, there's a girl on the volleyball team at school and her mom and dad, well, they're Greek. And
okay.
So, like literally I sat the other day at a volleyball game and tried to figure out how many Greek words I could.
Oh, right. And yeah. They're like, yeah.
And she would pronounce it correctly. Oh, you mean, and yeah. She'd say it. I was like, wow, this would be really helpful.
You need her there to correct you.
Yeah, because Google's
rebuke
not
you. No.
Getting it done.
Tell me this about anesthesia, though. Have you had an operation before with anesthesia?
Yeah.
Like you've gone under?
Oh, yeah.
And don't remember, what was it? I don't even, do you want to tell the audience? Is it private?
No, remember I had that lung issue last
right.
year.
So they put you under for that.
Oh, yeah. Scope. It was a bronchoscopy. Like I was coughing up blood for several days and stuff. But yeah, I remember it's funny. We came in, we were at the hospital and I was laying there pretty nervous because we had this mass that we were seeing on a scan. It ended up being scar tissue. Everybody is such a blessing. But, pulmonologist came in.
Yeah.
It was really, really early. He's like, well, how'd you sleep last night? I was like, not very good. He goes, yeah, me neither. And then he just turned around and started walking. He was like, I'm just kidding. And he turned around.
I'm sharp as a tack.
I was like, it was so funny. I was like,
when I used to do, like, because I was one of those guys that did not go to the dentist for about 20 years. And that's not great.
No.
But, you know, we were broke. And so we finally were like, hey, it's time to fix our teeth. And then the dentist was like, don't do this. Don't put this off.
Yeah.
This is what's going to happen. And I needed like 5 crowns and all this crap. So a million fillings. So in the process of that, my gums were so jagged that like even a cleaning would just, it was awful.
Yeah.
So they would have to like give me laughing gas.
Oh.
And so I remember one of the last, my last few dental appointments have been great. I've been getting gold stars and lollipops. They don't give you lollipops. That's a little bit counterintuitive to dentistry, but choose something from the drawer. It's like a bunch of fun dip.
Right.
Okay, so tobacco products. So I go, sure, you give me the gas. And so as he's turning it on, he goes, all right, I'm going to start you. I can't remember what he said. I'm going to start you at Waylon, and I'm going to crank you up to Johnny Cash. You just tell me when you feel it. I just thought that it was interesting that Johnny Cash was the high end of the...
That's funny.
Yeah. And he did. He cranked me all the way to cash, and I was not feeling it. I was still aware that people were drilling, but yeah. I was just like, this drill sounds funny.
These guys.
I wasn't laughing, though, so it wasn't funny to me, but I get why they call it that.
Well.
Because you wouldn't want somebody giggling. That would be interrupting. Of
right. Laughing
process.
Guys. If you're actively
if you're really
laughing.
Like laughing, they'd be like, all right, this yeah. guy's, he's gone.
No.
You yeah. need them to be like very docile, though, and mobile.
Docile, guy, and hostile, agile.
Missile.
Fragile.
Yeah. Anyway, I recommend it. I recommend the nitrous.
I wish I could just.
I guess it's the closest thing. I don't really imbibe. I'm not a drug person or an alcohol person, but that was. I remember thinking like I could get like the. I remember feeling I could feel like a pulsing from my arm out into my fingertips and back, like a vibrating sense. I was like, I don't hate this. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know how to describe it. Well, I was like, do I have superpowers now?
People don't get hooked on drugs because it doesn't feel good. You
right.
know what I'm saying? So I hear.
Well, I've told you the story about when I had a tooth extracted, a wisdom tooth extracted, and then the tooth next to it had to be extracted too. And I was on the gas, and I couldn't feel anything, but I remember hearing him. And then all of a sudden, I hear him go like, oh, and he was breaking it off into pieces and removing the pieces.
Dear.
And I didn't feel it. But he put his leg up on the armrest, and I felt his leg go, or his foot go right next to where my arm was to get leverage. That's how much this tooth was just in there. And I just remember thinking, like, well, that's odd. He shouldn't have to. He's really in there.
We know Laura, when she had her brain surgery, she was awake.
Yeah.
Well, she wasn't supposed to be awake.
Oh.
And so one of them, they had given her, that's how we figured out one of these meds does not. Put her under because she has a high tolerance.
Yeah.
And like, she's a nurse. And so she's laying there, she's asleep or whatever. But I guess she heard something that triggered her.
Right.
So it was not a traditional surgery. So they're in her femoral artery and they're, you know, doing the work and like they would a stent or something.
Right.
And so, you know, pretty exact work that you don't need to move. And
yeah,
so
you don't need to.
The doctor asked the nurse for something and Laura goes, got it. And like, started to reach up. To like hand them the thing, they're like, "Oh gosh!" So they had to change the anesthesia and put her under more. So she tried to help with her own brain surgery.
That'd be something, right?
And she's a helper. She's a two. That is,
yeah. But you don't want to do your own.
Beyond.
You don't want to do your own brain surgery.
No.
I know that.
Yeah, I mean, she was helping the doctor.
Even with my tiny brain, I knew that much.
Oh my goodness!
Sheesh. Well, I don't know. We appreciate your brains, dear listener.
Yeah.
Thanks for giving us 50 minutes of your time today.
Which, Johnny, we do need to answer one question from a listener.
Oh, do we?
Yeah. So, this one.
Oh, I think I got this
one.
It's
a fair question.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, we just assume sometimes everything we say goes off without a hitch, right?
Mm-hmm.
You assume that, right?
No.
Okay. And so, there was a dear listener who reached out and said, I just don't get help. Yeah. I just don't get the 90108 joke about Dawson Creek.
I thought we kind of explained it by me singing it, but evidently maybe the person, because I responded.
Oh, did you? You didn't copy me.
Well, yeah, I didn't respond. I didn't copy you, but I responded to them. And once I explained it, they got it.
Okay.
Because she was trying to figure out, like, is this,
because it's not in California and that's why it's, you know,
is that, does that have anything? I said, no, it doesn't have anything to do with it. There's a song by an artist called Paula Cole. It was a big hit and they used the song on Dawson's Creek every show.
Yeah.
In some heartwarming moment, the two lead characters are about to kiss, and this song would be playing, and it was, I don't want to wait for our love to be over. That was the song. And so that song became a big hit.
It sounds like
90108.
90108.
So that was the joke, is that 90210 is the, you know, the zip code for
and
Beverly
Hills.
And
that's why you paid the comedian for the perfect joke.
And, of course, we know that Dawson's Creek is 90108.
That's great.
For our lives to be over. Anyways, so that's why the joke is funny.
Well, I'm glad
and that's
you
why that's why it was worth my $20 Venmo, and I feel like I need to send him more money now because now I've used it for content.
Yeah.
Although I've given him the I can't remember his name, so
wow.
Yeah.
That's convenient, isn't it?
I'll tag him in the notes.
We call that hacking.
Is it? No, hacking is like when you I didn't steal his passwords.
Well, you hacked it. You're a hack.
I'm not a hack,
Johnny.
I gave him full credit.
But,
except for
his name.
Yeah. The $20 was so that I could make content with it. You're welcome.
this was a legal transaction.
Oh, man.
You know what, Johnny? People could support the podcast for $20. That's actually one of our support levels.
That would be so great. We love it when people support us. Yeah. You can go to our website, talkaboutthatpodcast.com. Click on that link in the upper right-hand corner. It says support, right? Say support.
It does.
Then the bottom right-hand corner has a little voice bubble, and that's how you send us an email to say, like, hey, love the show. Hey, hate the show. Hey,
right.
Why that outfit? Whatever you want to say, you can say those things.
And you can see us if you want to. Several of our YouTube episodes have...
They've started getting, like, big-time views, which we're very excited about. We're picking up a little momentum there.
Yeah, so maybe you go and help out with that.
Yeah.
You could subscribe, by the way. That would really help. Subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Click the little bell where you get notifications when we release a new video. And you can see our ugly mugs every single week.
Yeah, we do that. So you check out johnnyw.com, J-O-N-N-I-E, because, man, the tour dates are piling up left and right.
Well, they're not
like a snowdrift.
Piling up.
It's like,
that would be like
we were talking about
obtrusive.
We were talking about the Dust Bowl.
Yeah.
It's like Dust Bowl on the side of a house.
It is. It's a man-made disaster of my own making. Chinese. I only have myself to blame.
That's right.
We need government intervention to stop it from ever... I over-farmed my career. Anyway, you can go to Amazon.com, search for John Driver.
But not
John C?
Well, you can, but just remember, you're going to get a Mennonite theologian named John Driver, and
that's
he's way smarter than me.
No, John.
And he writes Christian books, but
that's false
older.
Humility. Is
no, he wrote like on the atonement of the church and stuff. Like I haven't.
Well,
you'll know mine because they'll be
you
know, less heady, more
there's more
and less better selling.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's places to color in the.
I do have a fully illustrated satire book.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Called The Ultimate Guide for the Avid Indoorsman.
Get a copy of that.
I actually saw it on ChristianBook.com last week for 49 cents. They were running a sale.
Well.
I wonder if it's still there. I'm not sure. Check it out. ChristianBook.com, Avid Indoorsman.
Oh, you're wanting people to go get it from there.
Well, yeah, it's like when they discount on Amazon.
May as well. Do it to it.
Go for it.
Get
I'm not
going to
make any money off of that
stocking
anyway.
Stocking stuffers now. Man.
Guys, it means a lot that you listen with us and to us every week. And so we'll do it again next week and
talk about that.
Finding uplifting news in today's headlines is often like searching for a needle in a haystack. At the Story Behind podcast, we believe in the power of finding heartwarming tales and are happy to share empowering stories with you every week. Hear about how Steve Harvey surprised a dying man on Family Feud with $25,000. Get inspired by the note a waitress received from a patron dining alone. And even hear about how one VIP passenger made a hardworking pilot get emotional before his flight. To start listening to the Story Behind podcast, visit lifeaudio.com or search Story Behind on your favorite podcast platform.